there, we gotta get this back up.
Yeah.
Good evening, everyone. I want to, first of all, thank all our guests for being with us. We're excited to have this work session on our, some presentation on First Tryon Financial Advisors. And we're gonna get right on into the brass tacks of it, so I'm gonna recognize City Manager John Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and through you to the members of the council. We do have a presentation for you today from First Tryon. As you know, last year, we made significant gains on the operational budget side, fairly significantly changing our budget format and the budget document. This effort deals with our capital budget and the need to seriously entertain a long-range capital plan. First Tryon has put a model together that they've used in many, many communities, and it's a model that's similar to the model that I'm used to seeing. There are several caveats to tonight's presentation. First of all, the numbers that are here are not relevant. This isn't about trying to pin down numbers, but to familiarize yourself with a model that you thereafter can utilize for legitimate long-range planning. And the second thing is that when you see a list of capital needs, it doesn't have the large category that all of us are all too painfully aware of, which are our utilities needs, our pipes in the ground, our infrastructure. It has been stated many times that it is our belief that if the citizens in Aiken choose to extend the capital project sales tax for round four, that there should be a commitment to our infrastructure needs. And so the utilities capital planning, which is funded through alternative sources, aren't a topic of this discussion tonight. But David Cheatwood is a director at First Tryon. We've been working with David and with Walter Goldsmith, along with attorney Gary Pope, who's an expert on what the laws in South Carolina allow for various revenue funding sources. And so Gary doesn't have a major presentation tonight. He is here to answer any questions that you might have, but he'll be very much more involved in future discussions about the possibility of various funding sources. So having said that, this is a meeting not about numbers, but a meeting about a financial model that we need to put into place so that we can begin to have a real conversation in Aiken about not only what our financial needs are, but what our options are in terms of implementing a real capital plan. So David, do you want to start us off?
Great.
Sorry, here in the
assume you'll have Ms. Sarah put this online.
Yes.
Thanks, John. Good afternoon or evening now, everyone. Thanks very much for having me here tonight. As John said, my name is David Cheatwood. I work at a firm called First Tryon Advisors. We're based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Got some material in front of you here, which is going to be the same thing we go through on the screen. Before we dive into that, just wanted to give you a little bit of background on myself, my colleague Walter Goldsmith, who's not joining us here tonight, and then also our firm in general. So our firm, First Tryon, serves as financial advisor to cities, counties, special purpose districts, water and sewer utilities across both North and South Carolina. So we work with a very good number of cities across the state, some of your peers. And so we work with those entities on, we provide advice on capital planning, which is really the focus of our discussion here tonight, but the capital planning, some of the pre-planning ideas that come up, in addition to kind of what results from that capital planning, if that's a bond issue or some sort of financing, and then a third phase being after a bond issue or after a capital planning phase, kind of the in-between, some of the regulatory and compliance things that regularly come up, some of the market moving events that are out there. So really three different phases, and again, it's going to be that first initial phase, that capital planning, pre-planning phase that we're focused on here tonight. Just some background on myself. I've been at First Tryon for coming up on 2 years now. Prior to that, worked at both Wells Fargo Securities and Bank of America Securities for about 10 years combined, in the Public Finance Investment Banking Group. Walter Goldsmith, my colleague, who got called away to a city council meeting down the road here, has been a financial advisor for 15-plus years. So between the two of us have a really good wide range of experience with different entities across the Carolinas, different sizes as well. We work with some big entities and some smaller ones, upstate, low country, so have a good kind of broad range of what other entities like you all are doing across the state. So what we want to accomplish here tonight, a couple things. One, really just talk about capital planning in general and the importance of having a good capital plan, especially for an entity like you all that's got some projects that you're considering. But having a good plan in place that you can follow, and it really gives you a good roadmap going forward. Once we talk a little bit about that, go into an overview of some of the projects that are on the city's relatively near-term time horizon there. So we'll walk through some of those projects in general. And then we also want to focus on some of your available revenue sources. You know, what's really important is not just the projects themselves, but obviously how are you going to pay for them? So we want to walk through in lockstep some of the different revenue sources that the city has available to it. I also want to touch on briefly some of the available financing alternatives that are out there. To the extent you all decide to go forward with a project and you've got the revenue to back it up, you may decide to issue debt behind that. So I want to just briefly touch on those different financing alternatives that are available under South Carolina law. And then lastly, as John mentioned, our capital planning model. This is where we want to really dig in and show you this tool that we've developed. As John said, this is an in-house tool. It's an Excel-based model that we've developed in-house, and it really came as a result of having a lot of conversations like these. We'd go and talk to both staff, elected officials about projects that are coming down the road, and what we really found is that we'd come in with a really nice, clean couple pieces of paper, showed you this scenario, and then people started talking and said, well, what if we move this project around? What if we change this amount, change this timing, change the priority, change the revenue source? And so with that, we always ended up having to go back, redo a few scenarios, come back. And so we thought, what's a better way to do that to help engage folks like you all more discussion? And so that's where we developed this model, and you'll see it. We'll pull it up live, real time, and so we can play around with the different features of it. Because again, that's the goal here, is to see what we've been working on with John and Kim and Stuart. So we can show you what we've been working on, what you're going to have at your disposal going forward, and how we can look at different scenarios that develop as a result of this, you know, these sorts of meetings, this discussion, and as things like the projects become clear, amounts become clear. And so that's really going to be our focus here tonight. So capital planning, you know, again, we come meet with our clients and really starting from a staff level, which is either from their own or coming from elected officials, we always get the same sorts of questions like, hey, we have this long list of projects. How do we fund them? How do we make these happen? You know, what's the impact? Can we afford these? If not, what's the impact on our tax rate? What other revenue sources do we have available? If we have a fund balance, can we use fund balance? If so, what's the impact on that fund balance, and what do we need to maintain going forward? If you follow through with a particular project and it needs to be financed, you obviously want to know what the financial impact is on that. If you go and do a public market bond issue, you need things like credit ratings. So what's the impact of these sorts of borrowings on our credit ratings? So a lot of different questions pop up, all centered around how do we get from point A to point B. And so with that, you know, capital planning to us is a really key first step for any, we say debt issuance, but any debt or kind of new capital project down the road. How do we accomplish that? And so, you know, we work with a lot of different entities, again, bigger or smaller entities. And so there's no one size fits all with capital plan. Bigger entities may have a bigger capital planning model, more in depth, more detail. Smaller entities may not need all the bells and whistles. But we think some form of capital planning model is a key first step when evaluating different projects. And we think it's a key first step because it helps everyone, really, from a staff level, elected officials, to know, all right, can we afford these projects? What's the impact on our finances? And really ensure just continued compliance with certain financial policies as well. You don't want to kind of do all these projects and realize that if you do have certain policies, minimum fund balance level, debt service as a percentage of operating expenditures, are you exceeding those policies? And so you'll see in the model when we get into that that's something we also track as well, But it's really just a, you know, how can we make all this work to avoid projects down the road or something pop up down the road that's unexpected, that you're not, that's going to impact your ability to fund future projects. Because again, a lot of times issuers will go and say, all right, we've got one project, let's fund this project and not keep an eye on what's coming down 2 years down the road, 3 years down the road. And so when they get to that point, they realize, well, I wish I would have done something differently if I would have really planned out multiple years in advance. So that's where the capital planning model really comes into play and carries a lot of importance. So again, just to reiterate, you know, benefits of the capital planning model, we think these can be both immediate and long-lasting, help educate both elected officials and the public on, again, are these projects affordable and what's the plan of finance? Because again, a lot of times when relaying to the public, if you can lay out a very comprehensive plan of finance, very easily understood, I think the public can get on board with it as well if it's well laid out. Also, it helps you evaluate different alternatives. You'll see when we pull this model up, you got a couple different revenue sources at your disposal, and so there's different ways to tackle different projects. And so we can evaluate different alternatives and see what the best fit is, what the best use of those revenues are. And it also helps build consensus from you all on in the public on projects, priority of those projects, the size and scope of those projects. So it really helps kind of get everybody on the same page as best we can. To the extent you have any publicly issued debt, as I mentioned, you have those bonds rated by credit rating agencies. And so they like to see that you know, you've got a long-range plan and you're not just doing project by project. So those are, we find this capital planning model helpful in our discussions with rating agencies as well. And again, you know, most immediate, it shows you your impact on your financials. One thing to really note here is that the capital planning model we'll go through today, I mean, it's just a starting point. This is going to be a dynamic model. Things are going to change as the size and scope of projects change, priorities change. And so this is not something you do one time, set it aside, and that's your plan for the next 5 years. It's going to be continually evolving, dynamic model. And that's really why we developed it this way, this tool in-house, so that we can change these things in real time, make it really interactive. Because we know the inputs, the projects themselves change frequently as well. So let's talk a little bit about, so let's touch on the importance of capital planning. Let's talk city specific, some of the projects that are under consideration over the next couple of years. And so we've just grouped them, some are more specific, others are more general. We've got road projects, you've got a wide variety of road projects that are out there. We've got the City Hall rehabilitation or addition, so the City Hall project, a parking garage, public safety headquarters building, public safety surveillance system, an HVAC unit at Odell Weeks, and undergrounding utilities. And so these projects we've talked to, again, meeting with John and Kim and Stewart, saying, all right, what are the projects? Give us your wish list of projects, all the projects that could come up over the next couple of years. Big caveat, as John said, this does not include utility or solid waste. We've got separate models set aside for that. What we wanted to focus on here are these main projects. And so we've got them all, once we pull up the capital planning model as a starting point, we've got them all loaded up. We've got just inputs for project amounts. Again, these are just plug figures for now for illustrative purposes only, so we can show you how the model works. As numbers start to come in, harder numbers, we can adjust that accordingly. But we've made assumptions for the inputs in terms of both timing and project size and project amount. We've made assumptions.
So you would advocate then, in the case of utilities, which are capital projects, would we have two capital plans or one?
We have it set up currently as three. We have this, you know, more of the general fund type projects, which would cover these. We've got a utility specific model set up, which is, again, separate because you've got utility system revenues driven towards that to the extent you have a capital project sales tax for, that would go that. So we have different revenue sources. Solid waste would normally be funded from user fees. And so we've tried to isolate the different different buckets of projects that are out there.
Okay, so what you say tonight about capital planning would apply to the other two that are not going to be discussed?
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. We would have the same sort of base model.
Follow up on what Dick is saying, it and Kim, I think we need to get specific on these. We have three enterprise funds, And when I look at these, you know, undergrounding utilities is one thing, replacing utilities with new lines and old lines is another, and roads are different. And I think we need to get specific early on, because when you talk about garbage and these others and water lines and stuff, that's already covered in stormwater. And I think as we develop or use this model or whatever we use, we need to get specific definitions for each one of them. Otherwise, the confusion factor in the misinformation committee is always at work. Because Capital Four is coming up in about 18 months to start work on it. So I think we need to segregate these now so that when we get to it, people don't confuse Powder House Connector with fixing the roads in the city. So I think, John, we need to do that.
That is a big problem, sure.
Yeah, we need
There's
to define each one of them.
About the different pots of money, and you know, most people just think it's all one pot of money. They're gonna come out
yeah,
of.
Because your water and sewer, I forgot, like $15 million or something.
Steve's going to be right on top of that.
Yeah. You know, so we got there's big pots of money
right.
In these others that we don't want to confuse this with, and we don't want to overlap them.
Right. And that's, we tried to separate those, again, utility improvements. We see credit rating entities see as a separate kind of standalone, realizing they're all city projects. But what you'll see here, in addition to this, in just one slide, you'll see the different revenue sources we've got coming.
I'll give an example. Undergrounding utilities, and I know several people in here are engineers like me, but undergrounding utilities, instead of saying that, it ought to be putting overhead lines underground. That's what that really means, okay? And I think that's what it means to us. But you go in the public, you know, if you talk about somebody living on Knox or Mead, oh, they gonna love
You're
this
right.
topic.
Yeah, they'll misinterpret.
You see the difference what I'm talking
sure,
about?
Sure, okay. Yeah. And so again, all of this, what we want to do here tonight is show it to you. Absolutely, take all feedback. We come back and revise the model accordingly, because, like I said, this is not a one size fits all. We want to tailor it to you all. What your projects, where your revenue sources are, so we'll make any, we'll take feedback and make those changes. So these are the types of projects we're looking at for the model we'll go through tonight. So let's talk about our different revenue sources that are available to us. You've got several for these groups of projects. You've got property tax revenue. You've got hospitality tax revenue, franchise fee, capital project sales tax from CPST number 3. There's some funds you'll see that are available. You can always use fund balance, and you can always use operating revenues. To the extent you can trim down operating expenditures, there may be some excess revenues available there. So let's take each of these in turn. So again, we know what we're working with when we're going through these types of projects. So property tax, y'all are currently living, sorry if I'm blocking your ears, 62 mills. Value of the mills, about $167,000. So what we've shown you over here on the right, and this is from our model, this is going to show you kind of what we've got available to us on the property tax side. We've assumed on that growth rate, your starting point, $167,000, we've assumed that grows at a 1% clip. Again, that's an assumption. That's something that we can change, but that's a 1% growth rate. We've also assumed a collection percentage of 98%. I think y'all collected north of that, but again, trying to be conservative to get to a collected value of a mill. You can see there in fiscal 17, just under 164,000. That's going to grow at 1% over the next however many years we've got in our model.
But that's a growth on the value of the dollar, not on any expected increase in millage rate.
Correct. That's right. Just general
growth on the dollar.
Yeah.
Right.
New construction.
Right. Right.
Yes.
We're home steady at 62 mills.
The growth of 1%.
Yes. Yeah.
And he's aware we're at 0.72 for 5 years now.
I'm sorry. Say that again.
0.62.
Oh, in terms of growth, yeah.
The actual growth, it was way up this year.
Right.
But over 5 years from the last census, it's 0.72 on the average.
Right.
Stuart uses 0.74, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Are you talking about what population growth?
Population.
Okay.
Population. Okay. Population.
That sounds right. I just didn't know which growth you were talking about.
Okay. So that's revenue source number one. Revenue source numbers 2 and 3 here, and we've split this up. Hospitality tax. City collects, you know, based on fiscal 16, about $1.3 million annually in hospitality tax revenues. Of that amount, $1,150,000 is available for these types of projects that we're going to walk through. The rest of that is geared towards marketing and a couple other items there. And so internally, the city of that $1,150,000 has allocated those funds as follows: $400,000 of that amount for roads, and then $750,000 for parking. And so what you can see here, we've got the chart. Again, we've assumed that your hospitality tax revenues grow at 1% per year. And so you can see our starting point of hospitality tax for roads, starting at 400, growing by 1% annually thereafter. Similarly, on the hospitality tax for parking, starting at 750,000, growing by 1%. So you can see after, you know, 25 odd years, what that grows to based on that 1% growth rate. Franchise fee, you all collected about $1,130,000 in fiscal 16, so that's our starting point. And again, we've got that, let me take that back, that's just the 2% increase. Yes, so you all collected more than that in franchise fee, that's just the additional 2% that came into effect last year. And so that's $1,130,000 growing at 1% per year. And so you'll see how all these work when we pull up the model and how we can tinker with the different assumptions about which revenue stream goes to which project.
Now, where's the road tax?
The roads maintenance fee was not part of this plan because the roads maintenance fee has been envisioned as a cash program so that as we take cash in, we fix roads. And it hasn't been envisioned to have the road maintenance fee as part of a capital plan.
It was written, and Mr. City Attorney and Ms. Jones can, but it specifically goes to the road repairs.
Right.
It's not used for slush funds or anything else.
It's just for road repairs, and it's a cash program.
And so that goes into Michelle's budget.
Yeah. Okay. And these roads that we're talking about are roads that are new roads.
Okay.
And there has to be obviously be a nexus between the roads that we build and visitors into the city.
Okay.
For example, a partial solution to the Whiskey Road traffic congestion.
And so you know, as we broke out the hospitality between roads and parking needs, franchise fee, we've got that revenue stream currently dedicated to road projects and any public safety projects that arise. Capital project sales tax. The city has about $3.6 million of funds on hand from CPST number 3 that are available. They could apply that towards a city hall addition renovation and any public safety projects. So you'll see how that comes into play. Don't have a separate graph for that, but $3.6 million of revenues from CPST number 3.
I'm not sure I'd agree with that. Those monies are designated for certain projects.
But they're designated for city hall that, and public safety.
Some of it are.
Yeah. He's just talking about the amount of money that's in CPST. It was designated to use that money to improve and expand city hall. That's right.
This is available money.
Yes.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. Some of it's already been spent.
No, but
this is all that's left.
This is what's left.
You'll see how it comes in.
All right. Okay.
Two more pages.
Joe and I just went over this, so this is what's left as of the end of last month.
Okay.
And it's important, that number.
And so what we don't have in here is any sort of revenues that come up from, you know, CPST number 4, assuming it passes in a few years. You know, what you use those revenues for, obviously dependent on what you all decide, what you put in that, decide to put in that bucket. So we just got the CPST number 3 here. Don't take into account any potential future revenues under number 4. A couple other revenue sources, fund balance, funds on hand. As of the end of fiscal 16, you all had about $15 million in total fund balance in your general fund. Of that amount, just under $3 million was unassigned or available for these sorts of projects. We've given you a little bit of history here on the city's fund balance. You can see your total fund balance has held fairly steady around that $15-16 million range. Your unassigned fund balance has also been as high as $5 million in 13, but you know, more likely in that $2 to $3 million range as well. One thing we track, rating agencies track, is your unassigned fund balance as a percentage of expenditures. You see your expenditures in that top line being around $25 million per year. With that unassigned fund balance level of around $3 million, your percentage is just under 12%. So that's something.
So we're doing okay, but we haven't reached our goal.
Right.
So the possibility of using a fund balance to fund capital projects are inconsistent with our financial policy of getting 16% before you spend fund balance.
Because you want 16%.
That's right. Yeah.
All right. Now, I thought we were going on the 90 to 180 days of money in the bank so that we didn't have to borrow from the state to pay our bills till our taxes came in. Is that the same thing as this, or this is different? Because, you know, our chart shows us that we have enough balance that we carry ourselves over without having to borrow money to pay the bills between tax date, July. And
right.
The standard that David's talking about is the standard that bond rating agencies use when they evaluate the strength of our community's finances by looking at a percentage of fund balance as a percentage of total expenditures.
Because we got a lot of money scattered through half a G in accounts and LGIP.
Yeah.
Is that what this is?
No, this is just talking about the general fund right here. And the unassigned does not include all of the ones that are designated for equipment replacement or building replacement, things like that.
Is that number 18 or 20 million in itself?
That's right.
But that's the 15 million number.
Is that the 15 number from LGIP? Yes, okay. Yeah. Got it.
But that's not all. That's not all.
All of it. Okay.
This is just general fund that we're talking about here.
So while that is, as John was saying, that is technically an available source of revenues, given your current level, you're falling a little bit short of your policy there. And so realistically speaking, that's not a bucket you really want to draw from right now until that level gets higher. And then a final revenue source that's out there, just operating revenues. Again, as I mentioned at the outset, to the extent you can reduce operating expenditures and therefore create some excess operating revenues that come in, that's can be an available revenue source that's available to you.
We're in a very unique situation, obviously, because we don't have debt, but usually in a municipal budget, there is as part of the operating budget, is a line item for debt service, which is part of the operating budget.
Yes, but we haven't, our income has not been offsetting inflation either.
Yeah.
So to say that, and I'm philosophizing, of course, but over the last number of years, like 2008 or 9, income has not offset inflation. Therefore, we're still running short on money, if you will, compared to collections.
Right.
You understand? Is that accounted for in here?
The fact that you were, a deficit in certain years, or you're.
Well, it's a slow downhill for the last 4 or 5 years. It's not exactly straight. Sometimes it's up a little bit.
Right.
But we have to offset inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Just reducing cost to offset inflation, which the city manager said he'd do, instead of raising property taxes this time.
Right.
So they went down.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to be sure that we account for inflation and all of this that the city lives with. Doesn't sound like we are. Or maybe I missed something.
We're not looking at your operating budget in terms of just your daily operating expenditures, annual operating expenditures going forward. It's something we can certainly add into that too.
I think it's got to be on its own because of inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Final opinion. I mean, y'all can work out the numbers and prove me wrong.
David.
Yes.
As you advise us on under your available revenue sources, are you looking at what is practical for us, or if I can use the term, a shot in the dark, and that would be federal funds that's possibly available? Is this part of that package? You don't advise your folks to even have that kind of discussion because it's a gamble. You never know whether you're going to get anything or not.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. We don't get into the federal funds and what's available because obviously don't know what's going to come, and so can't count on that. We generally take that out and just look at what's within the city or the entity's control in terms of your available revenue sources. I'd say we typically don't take that into account unless you all say we've got a grant coming in or we've got some funds coming in. Maybe it's a project where it's, we will do this project if a grant comes in, so you can kind of tie that one to a specific grant or funds coming in. So those are our available, we talked through the different projects that are out there that we're focused on here in this model. Talked about the different available revenue streams that are there. If a project materializes the needs there to finance that project, you then have to look at what's the best financing structure. So we're not going to get into this too much when we get into the model, but just want to let y'all know what's out there. When you're looking at the different projects, you've got to obviously, you know, be aware of what's allowed under state statutes. That's where Gary comes in and lets us know what we can and cannot do. You know, things like, do you have to put a lien or security interest on the particular property or a project that's being financed? And obviously the big one that we're focused on, what resources are available to pay that debt? In South Carolina, you've got kind of the most common financing structures are general obligation bonds. Those are secured by the full faith, credit, taxing power of the entity. General obligation bonds can be issued one of two ways, either voter referendum, or you can issue general obligation bonds up to 8% of the city's assessed value without a voter referendum. So there are two different ways to issue GO bonds there. There's things out there called installment purchase revenue bonds. Those are not subject to voter referendum. You can pay those from either available revenue streams like we'll go through tonight or that we just went through, or you can do it, there's a way to do it. This is more kind of mechanical. You can do it each and every year. You can repay that debt with general obligation bonds issued each and every year under your 8% capacity. And then you've got just revenue bonds. Those can be hospitality fee revenue bonds, you know, water and sewer revenue bonds, tax increment bonds. So there's a revenue where you've got a specific revenue stream tied to that. That revenue stream is pledged. So those are really the three main categories. There's some other, you can do lease purchase for equipment. There's some other smaller financing structures that are available out there as well. And you know, y'all are in a very enviable position across the state. You've got no debt, so you've got a total clean slate to start with. And so that's what's really actually exciting. Should have said this at the outset. In developing a capital planning model like this, again, with a clean slate, y'all can look at a bunch of different combinations, a bunch of different alternatives, because you're not tied into one specific thing. It's not like you've got a series of bonds out there that ties up a specific revenue stream for the next 20 years and you can't access it. So it's, I think it's exciting, and it's a good position to be on, be in, that y'all have got a clean slate to start with. I mentioned that here, you can issue bonds when it comes time to that. You can either issue them in the public market, which requires an offering document or a disclosure document, or you can issue them straight to a bank where the bank buys it, holds it on its balance sheet. And you can sell bonds one of two ways, negotiated. You can negotiate directly with a bank or an underwriter, or you can sell it competitively where you bid it out to a variety of different banks or underwriters. So that's a really high-level primer on just available financing structures that are out there. Again, I think that's really step two. Once we get through the different projects, revenue streams, and really try to zero in on what's the best way to that the projects are going to come online, you then look at the financing structures available to you. So getting into the capital planning model itself, you know, as I mentioned, this came about just through a lot of conversations like these and trying to find something that really lets us look at different revenue sources, different projects, and very interactive, dynamic, real-time, change assumptions so you all can see how it impacts the finances, what's possible, what's affordable, both on a near-term or long-term horizon. The good thing about this model is we can put in as many projects as you want for as long a period as you want and really see how it all plays out. You'll see when we get into this, we've got a couple main sections here. We've got an input section where we're going to put in your wish list of projects. Every project you want to consider, we put in that we put that project in. We also put in things like the cost of the project, the timing, when you want to either have those funds available or borrow those funds. If it's debt, what's the debt service structure? Is it a level debt service like you would pay on a mortgage? Is it some other level principal, for instance, where your principal amount's the same every year? So we've got the ability to change that debt service structuring as well. We can put in things like term. Again, if it's debt, are you going to repay that debt over 15, 20, 25 years, and at what interest rate? Those are all inputs we can put in that are then going to tell us kind of what the impact is depending on those inputs. If it's debt, we can also identify the bond source, the general obligation bond, the revenue bond, installment purchase revenue bond, those things we just went through. We can identify those different financing structures that we've got available to us. And then finally, we can look at, you know, start to break these projects up as well. If we want to fund a portion of it from hospitality, a portion of it from franchise fee, we've got the ability to segregate those different projects and break them up, and so you can see what the amount is to each one. So those are all our inputs. We can put all those in. Again, our outputs, what we're really looking for is what's the impact? If it's an impact on taxes, what's the tax impact? If it's an impact on your hospitality or franchise fee revenues, we want to focus on the coverage. If it's debt, are your revenues covering your debt? And if so, at what level? So what you'll see here, and we'll go ahead and kind of show you an example. These are the inputs. And I would say don't get too focused on the numbers yet. These are numbers we put in as a starting point, illustrative purposes only, to show you how this works. But this is going to be our inputs tab, and we'll pull this up real time. But we've got all
We just started this process by coming up with about $50 million worth of projects. So there's no relevance to the David plugged numbers in willy-nilly here. So.
Right. We've got all these different sorts of projects as our starting point, the ones we went through, the city hall, the parking garage, public safety headquarters. We've got all those loaded up. We've got some varying amounts. You'll see once we get into this, we've broken up certain of these projects because we've got a couple different revenue sources that we want to divide up. We've noted our, you know, funding type. Is that from fund balance? Is it from PAYGO? Is it from general obligation bond, hospitality fee revenues? We can note our revenue source, if it's debt, our structure, our term, and our rate. And so what we're going to have here is, as I said, our starting point. You can see the aggregate amount of each of these main kind of high-level projects, from roads, public safety headquarters. Again, we've got this built in plug figures for now for illustrative purposes to show you those inputs. And then our output section, this is what you know, we're really focused on. Based on those inputs, can we afford this debt? And so that's what we're going to look through here. We've got things like either a millage or tax impact or debt service coverage, depending on the revenue source. If it's property tax, this is going to pop up depending on when our what our inputs are. It's going to pop up if it requires a tax increase. If it's a revenue stream like hospitality or franchise fee, what this model is going to do is going to tell us, all right, on an annual basis, are our available revenues that are coming in covering our debt service? And so we've got, you'll see these are coverage figures we've got here. In addition to this annual coverage, if we've got things being paid out of fund balance, we're going to track our fund balance. We've got our general fund, unassigned fund balance there, that 11% figure. We've got our different hospitality buckets broken out, as well as franchise fee and capital project sales tax. So these are the things, the outputs that we're focused on in this model is our impact on our revenue stream, whether it's property tax or from a coverage standpoint, our other revenues there, and then ongoing, make sure we're not dipping below our fund balance levels in each of these funds. So that's the screenshot. I'm going to pull this up in Excel, but I'll pause right there. Just haven't gone through a lot of information, see if there's any questions at this point before we pull it up and kind of show you how it works. And we can start playing around with different
this
numbers.
This page is going to take some more explaining.
This one right here?
Yeah,
absolutely.
I get it, I think, but I just want to see it.
Yeah, this will make more sense when we pull it up and kind of walk through some of that.
A couple of things, and I think when I look it back up one page, on page 11, we sure need to get our wording correct for what the projects are. And what we call fund balance and revenue source and all that. Be sure that we use the name that we see Dan writes in the paper and what the public understands. And I think if it takes a couple of words more to do that, I think is important for the understanding of this. The other part, and this is philosophy questions, what about is there a mortgage insurance? And what I'm looking at, this is 20 years. You know, it's 10 city council elections. The city turns 200 years old, and we're going to have at least two more recessions or whatever you got. So what guarantees this? If we have another recession, we lose, you know, and it goes down, we just raise taxes to pay for it, or how do we pay for it in a downturn?
Right. So that's going to depend on the type of structure, financing structure you put in place. If you've got a general obligation bond, you sell a general obligation bond, it is backed by the city's full faith credit taxing power. So if something goes down, the taxes you anticipate coming in, your assessed value falls, you're not bringing that in, then under a GO structure, you increase the tax rate to pay that. If it's a revenue backed, a revenue bond where you've got a dedicated revenue stream coming in, and then nothing else backing it, then it's just a revenue stream. So if that revenue falls short, you may not have the funds to pay that, and that's where the city can step up and say, all right, well, we'll fund that balance. But from a pure pledge standpoint, investors are buying that bond, looking at your revenue stream and seeing if that's good enough, makes them comfortable enough. And so it really depends on the type of financing structure you put in place.
And you had up here the max borrow rate for the city, or the bond rate, you had 8% up there. Was that 8% of the 20 of the general revenue fund, or is that 8% of what?
So you're, that 8% is not an interest rate. That's an amount of
how much we can bond out.
Yes, that's the amount of general obligation bonds you can issue without voter referendum. It's 8% of the total taxable assessed value within the city. So your current 8% debt limit is right around $13 million. So you could issue up to $13 million in general obligation bonds without voter referendum. You can do that. You can issue other revenue bonds or installment purchase revenue bonds as well. That 8% is just limited to GO bonds.
Okay. So it's not like the banks. We're not too big to fail. Uncle Sam's not going to bail us out, huh?
Right. It's the city's credit, and when you go and issue those bonds in the public market, you're getting them rated. And so the credit rating agencies are evaluating your ability, city's ability to repay its debt. So it's looking at, depending on, again, what the financing structure is, if there's a pledged revenue stream, they're going to look at historical collections, if you've got things like debt service coverage, if you put a kind of a city backstop behind it, if those revenues come to fall short. And so there's that's where it gets into the type of structure is really going to be going to drive the answer to your question in terms of what happens if.
And that's why we need to fulfill our policy of being at 16% fund balance, because in any given year where your very conservative initial estimates go wrong, you should be able to go into fund balance for 1 year to make the correction, either that or cut the operating budget. And so the key here for most of the communities in the country that borrow anyways is to be as conservative as one can be in the initial projections. Not only does the city need to do that, the bond rating agencies are going to do that. I mean, they're the most conservative people you ever meet. And if you think that you're going to fool them with rosy financial projections, you have to get up pretty early in the morning to do that.
It strikes me that there's two concerns that strike me. Number one, there is a limitation to how much money we can acquire to do projects. I mean, obviously, we've got the $13 million bond limit, and I guess we could go to the voters and ask them for more money. We could increase millage rate and so forth.
Well, that's on the general obligation bond. There's the revenue bonds that are available.
Okay. The other thing that is a challenge to me in using this concept, and I like the concept, but there is so much that on the plate for the city right now. I mean, 2 years ago, the Hotel Aiken wasn't even an issue, and now it is. And now the police station is an issue, and we put in capital project sales tax. We need to do the police station. We had no idea it was going to cost $14 million. Not sure that we'll even do it at that cost, and I'm not... So those are the two limitations, and that, I mean, dynamic-wise, is we rose.
No, but we're putting a initial capital planning budget together that assumes existing revenues are what we have. And the only caveat, that's for the general fund. We're not assuming tax increases. You have raised selective fees, the hospitality tax and whatever. What you see before you is what we're assuming we have. And in the second instance, the only exception to that are your utilities, and you will have to decide. For example, when we have the major presentation in a couple of weeks about the possibility of a transfer station or new equipment that's cost efficient, we would have to buy new equipment. So you're going to need to decide whether you're going to raise rates. So that's a separate issue. Utilities and enterprise funds are a separate issue. But in terms of the general fund, our modeling initially assumes that we're not raising taxes. So the question is, what is our capacity to begin a process of funding projects that should have been funded years ago with the resources that we have.
And the available funding is going to dictate what we do.
The available funding will ultimately dictate what the plan is, yes.
And I still want to reiterate that we should not hold a hospitality tax as an absolute guarantee, because in the past, the city had to give up the hospitality tax to get capital projects passed. And whether we have to do that again or not, I don't know.
But that's a political, a political issue, because once we contemplate spending the hospitality tax for items that need to be borrowed for, then you're committing yourself. Right now, we're just putting money aside in a fund for new roads, and we're putting additional money aside mm-hmm. for the downtown parking challenges, which is fine. But once you decide what you're going to do, if borrowing is involved, you are committing yourself.
But there is another, and I actually just want to prompt David to speak to this, because he may think this is a bad idea, and I like his opinion. But there are other options for revenue sources that not only don't include new taxes, but could help avoid dependence on things like hospitality tax or other things. And that's through some of the other structures that the state allows for, like a CID or a TIF or some of the other things, mm-hmm. which, you know, those can provide revenue to offset borrowing, you know, pay for the borrowing, without using any of our current revenue sources if you feel like they're unreliable, and without doing any kind of general obligation bond. Now, I think
that's Gary's expertise.
Yeah, I think Gary had spoken to it, and he said, for instance, on the only project that I'd asked him about, which was the idea of Downtown Renaissance project, for lack of a better title for it, he said that, you know, that one would be one that he'd have to sit down and think about, but it may or may not be perfect scenario for one of those. But those are a different funding source that can provide revenue that we're not talking about now. And David, if you want to expand on that, because you're by far more of an expert than I am, but that's just new revenue that's not some that we're already collecting from our taxpayers, just revenue that comes from somebody totally different.
That's right. That isn't another available revenue source, not currently, because y'all don't have, for instance, a tax increment district set up. But that's something, if you want to set that up in anticipation of some new activity, increased values, that can be a revenue source in the future going forward. It's going to take some time to get that going, to build that up. But that is a revenue source that's out there that you all don't currently.
So what our goal is in a series of two or three meetings is to significantly increase our capacity to understand what tools are available within existing resources to fund some of the projects. And Gary will have a night with Gary where he talks about the alternatives that Philip mentioned or what have you. But
night with Gary, that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Coffee with him.
Yeah.
Better than it sounds.
Well, I just want to reflect the discomfort in not knowing what the projects are that we're going to have to do. As I said, 2 years ago, Hotel Aiken wasn't even in the picture.
Right.
What's going to happen now, 2 years from now, that we need? I mean, and you're right, your point's well taken.
Right.
We haven't done a lot of the stuff that should have been done a long time ago.
But there's been significant advancement in our understanding of our infrastructure needs just in the last 6 months.
Yes.
The work that Michelle and George are doing. So that's coming along. We've evaluated all our buildings, which haven't been the case. So we know. So we're in a much better position today than we were a year ago in terms of understanding what our needs are going to be in the next 10 to 15
years. And that's what's causing so much heartburn in the general public. I echo what Reggie's saying about using the right terminology, because it is so important. But because from my point of view as one of the newer members on council, it doesn't look like we've ever really done this kind of full-fledged 30,000 or 45,000 foot assessment of everything. And we're finally pulling it all together to finally create some plan that we'd all, with public input, we'd all agree on. That it's scaring some people to death when they read about in the paper, where they read one idea and then another idea and another need, and it's scaring people to death. But if you never pull together all your needs and all your problems and all your issues and all your challenges and all your goals, you'll never have a plan. And so it's scaring people, but it is I thank y'all for doing it. It is the most first step that you have to undertake if we go first.
And that's why it's important to identify the needs.
Right. Yeah.
And some of these are more wants than needs, but in either case, it's critical to identify the tasks that need to be done, the projects.
But I think that ultimately, the tough decision that you need to make ultimately as a council in terms of what is a want and what is a need, you also need to know what your existing capacity is. And that's what we're trying to do, to be able to explain to you what our existing capacity is. If we're not going to raise taxes, then what is our capacity? Then within that capacity, you'll see a list of projects and go through a very deliberative process in terms of supporting that project over that project.
And it's as important to explain this to the public as it is to the council.
Right.
Absolutely.
John. And David, you've given us 7 items to take a look at, and this may not be phrased based on comment from our colleagues, my colleagues on council, road projects, for example, that Reggie indicated, and infrastructure. There are 7 items here. And John, you said something, you used a quote that I'd like to hear over and over, because it hits home. And your quote was increased capacity within existing revenue.
Right.
We have these 7 items here. And the question comes is, based on our current revenue, can we do these? If the money is not there, how can we do this within existing revenue? And after we lay out our plan to the public and what this will cost, the big question will be what they're going to ask, how are we going to fund this?
Right.
And that's the, here is where the rubber meets the road. You also mentioned kicking the can down the road. We kick the can down the road another 30 years and let someone else wonder what happened with this kind of discussion years back. So we've got to come as a community together in some sort of visioning leadership role to make some tough decisions in the very near future as to where we want to go.
But one of the tools that we are now making available to you is this model that
right.
makes it, when you actually see the model, it's to a point where you can play with the model and say, what if this, what is that? It not only makes it clear to you as elected officials, but I think that it'll make it clear to the community, what our real options are.
Mm-hmm.
And we've never had, I don't believe that this
not,
city's ever had this capacity.
This clear, no.
And so that's what you said is exactly what this model is designed to do. Do our existing revenues, can we afford to do these? Do we have the capacity to do these projects? If not, then it's the decision of, do we have an increase in property tax or something else to do this project, or do we just fit it within our available revenue streams? And so that's the decision point that you have, and that's what this model is designed to answer those questions and go through those different scenarios. We'll go through the Excel model here. All right, so I'm going to try to blow this up for the back of the room. The folks back there see that?
We can barely see it up here.
Go ahead and pull it up. We'll let you know.
No, I can see
a little bit better?
Yeah.
So here's what we've got here. Let me actually just go just a touch less so I can get this full part on the screen. So what we've done in this, again, Excel-based model, we are dropping in every project you have you want to consider. We're going to drop that in. We're also going to drop in the amounts of these projects, again, illustrated purposes now for these amounts, the timing of when this need will arise, what our funding type is, and you can see in certain of these boxes we've got drop-down menu we can choose from. If it's a bond issue, it can be a GO, it can be an installment purchase revenue bond, a hospitality fee revenue bond, or a lease purchase. You can also use fund balance. We've got an option here. We'll talk about a sale of the building and proceeds that are generated from that. Is it an annual or one-time pay-as-you-go project, or is it an ongoing? Each year you're going to have a certain pay-go amount. So we've got these different drop-down boxes so that when we can change these again real time if we want to change the where those funds are coming from. So in addition, we talked about the different revenue sources we've got available to us. Property tax, hospitality fee, broken up between the parking, the portion dedicated to parking and the portion dedicated to roads, franchise fee, and CPST 3, so that $3.6 million in funds available. We've got CPST 4 in here as a drop-down menu, but we don't have those revenue sources available to us right now. If it's a bond issue, for instance, here, we've got a hospitality fee bond. We can tell it level debt service, which is mortgage style, where your payment's the same every year, or level principal, where your principal payment's gonna be the same, so your first overall payment's gonna be higher and it's decreasing. So we got a couple different ways to structure the debt. We can put in the term, we can put in 15 years, 10 years, 20 years, we just input whatever the term is if it's a borrowing. We've got a little bit of structuring flexibility here. If we wanna start it, go ahead and issue the bonds, but not start paying principal back for a couple years. We can, you know, right now we've got all these being paid back starting in the first year. We can defer that principal for a year or two if we need to get over a particular hump in our available revenues, or if we've already got some debt outstanding, we can get over a particular hump in debt service. And then we've also got the ability to input an assumed interest rate. Interest rates right now, you know, we've bounced off the bottom. Summertime is probably the all-time lows in interest rates, and we've been pretty much in a all-time low type of interest rate environment going on a couple of years now. We've started to see those rates creep up here over the last couple of months. What we typically do when we're looking at different borrowing amounts, we want to be conservative, so put in some level of cushion. The farther out the project, the more cushion we're going to put into that interest rate. And the interest rate is also determined by the type of bond issue. A general obligation bond is going to sell at a lower interest rate than maybe a revenue bond. And so that carries a little bit lower rate. And then also the term comes into play when we're looking at the rate. Longer you go, the higher the interest rate. So those factors come into play on our interest rate. What you saw over here are different property tax impact or our different coverage levels based on our various revenue streams there. That's something I'll show you how when we change this is gonna come into play. And I'll show you into each of these funds. So we're looking at things like impact and coverage, and we're also looking at our fund balance levels. These are ongoing fund balance levels in each of these different funds, franchise, hospitality, general fund. So this is our kind of inputs page. This is where we're gonna change the different functions here. But for each one of these, we've got a tab that's broken out for each one of these revenue streams where, for instance, this is property tax. And what we've got here, you remember our starting point, value of a mill, $167,000, an assumed growth rate, an assumed collection percentage. So at the end of the day, we get our column 5, which is our collected value. That's the property tax money we have. If we've got a general obligation bond, or a bond issue being paid from property tax revenues, we've got that coming into play here, and we've got one as a sample set up on our inputs tab so we can show you how this all works. So our debt service is gonna come into here. We're also, based on that debt service, if it requires a property tax increase, again, for illustrative purposes, to show you how the model works, we've got one just plugged in here. This is gonna show you the property tax that's required, increase that's required, and what year that would come into play. If we're using fund balance, we've got some fund balance. That would come up here. It would pop up depending on our inputs tab, and we can show our ongoing fund balance levels. Same thing on hospitality for each of these, and these are going to be a very kind of similar setup here. We've got our revenues available. We've got our assumed growth rate. This is for the road section. We've got our proposed, anything we say is debt, and it's funded by our hospitality revenues, our roads portion, that's going to come into play here. We can look at things like, you asked about their debt service coverage. What's being pulled up on our first inputs tab is from here. What this is basically saying is, based on these inputs, we've got a bond issue where our bond issue, based on those parameters, is going to result in about $365,000 a year in annual debt service. You can see our hospitality tax coming in related to roads, based on our 1% growth assumption and our $400,000 starting point, it's going to be about $408,000. So our coverage in that year, our revenues are covering our debt service by 1.2 times. And so that's something we obviously got to track. Obviously got to be in excess of 1 times for it to be covering. And then you may want some cushion above and beyond that as well. So that's where these coverage levels are coming from, based on these, whatever we put on our input, it's going to automatically calculate back here what these different coverage levels are. If we say it's using fund balance, it's going to be drawn out of here. And so we've got a starting point of about $400,000 in our hospitality fund that can go towards this. And so that's going to be an ongoing, that's going to grow over time to the extent we've got revenues coming in, and it will take into account debt service going out. So we're going to track our fund balance as well.
Is it reasonable to assume hospitality tax revenue grows 1% a year?
Yeah, I mean, y'all don't have the history behind it. It's just
no, but you've got history year, with other clients.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on where it is. But I say, by and large, the hospitality stream has been pretty consistent, solid. We have seen some growth. And so I think that's
here, but I mean, how about your other clients?
In other places as well.
Okay.
I mean, hospitality has been one of the stronger streams, especially coming out of the recession. We've seen those a lot of places we work with, whether that's the hospitality.
That's below the inflation rate. And it would probably track closer to an inflation rate.
Yeah. I think that's a reasonable assumption and conservative assumption as well. So we do the same exact thing, not going to go through this one, but it's the same exact thing, hospitality fee for that $750,000 related to parking or earmarked for parking. We've got that built out. Any debt service we say is coming from that is going to come into play. We're going to look at our coverage. We're going to look at our fund balance. Same setup on franchise fee. We've got our...
Is there a recommended coverage ratio that you want on those things? I mean, that seems to be the way they're showing.
So that's a good question, and it comes into play when you're talking to rating agencies.
Right.
They're going to look at coverage, and it depends on the structure. If you're selling a revenue bond where your only available source of repayment is that revenue stream, you're going to want a higher level of coverage.
Sure.
And your coverage is going to be one of the main determining factors in your bond rating. So if you've got thin coverage, you're going to get a lower rated bond.
Right.
It's going to be higher interest
price,
rate.
Right.
And so it's always a trade-off. Yes, you want more coverage to get a better rating, lower interest rate, but at some point, you know, you don't want to impact your ability to fund the project.
So what are they going to be looking for? Is 1.1 good, or is that considered pretty thin?
No, that's thin.
That's what I thought.
And so, you know, a way that some entities can look at that is, if they want to really maximize every dollar of their hospitality or their franchise fee, they can get closer to that 1 times, and then they can put a backstop. So, you know, city, hey, if this revenue stream is short, the city will step up and use other available funds to make that payment. And so that, if you do that kind of backstop, that secondary source of security, which there's a way to do that in the different financing structures, you can get a little bit thinner coverage, because the credit rating agencies are going to not just look at that revenue stream, but also look at the city's ability to step up.
The full faith and credit business.
Yeah.
You know, what in the business world, what we would do, I say we, but what they would do, is you start with your coverage ratio and your revenue, and you back into how much the bond amount would be.
Yeah.
And then you say, okay, this is my budget.
Right.
Will this tool work for that?
Yep, we can absolutely do that. And that's one thing, when we start playing around with the numbers, if we want to show, this is one of the, what we've got up here on these coverage levels, if we want to have something that's, you know, a 125 coverage or a 150, for instance, on our hospitality for roads, instead of 1 times coverage, we want our minimum to be
1.2.
What that's going to automatically do is tell us the years where we're short. And so then we can go back and lower our amount to get in excess of 1.2.
Yes.
So we can change, and we can also just do it the other way and say 1.2, whatever we can fund, we can fund.
Right.
So that's definitely
that's
way to do it.
That's how you set your budget from there.
Yeah. And so that's one way to do it. Here, with the way we've got it set up, is if we want to set a particular coverage level, we put that in up here, and it's automatically going to tell us if we're short, so that we need to change certain things.
That'd be a fun tool to play with. Are we going to get a copy of Bert?
Yeah.
I'm a spreadsheet junkie. I sit as a hobby. I sit and play with spreadsheets.
Is the app available for your iPhone?
So we've got, franchise fee, exact same setup, revenues, growth rate, any debt service that we have coming in, any PAYGO, what our coverage levels are, and our fund balance. So again, those revenue streams, franchise fee, hospitality, the same. CPST number three, pretty straightforward. We've got a page set up, but you've got $3.6 million there in that funds available. You'll see where we have that being used. So it's there and then it's out. So there's not a whole lot on the CPST side, at least for number three.
Now, I'm going to go back to earlier statement. You need to divide that up to where, and I'm following what Dick said, that $3.6 million is in two pieces. Part of it goes to the renovation and part of it to public safety. So what at least my opinion is, and maybe not shared by everybody on council, we need to designate this stuff so as it moves through the till, the chief over there is not expecting $3.6 million. And then over here, the city manager is expecting 3.6 on this building. So we need to get those divided up right away.
And we do on our inputs tab, and this is where we can divide certain projects because we can split up those revenues.
But you got to split up the 3.6. You can't call it 3 because it's not 3.6 available.
We've got 3.6 of capital project sales tax available, right? And within that 3.6, what we've got here is we've got $1.2 million going to City Hall. Rehab, and then we've got 2.4 going to, and so at the end of the day, we're going to be able to see on our capital project, this is a running kind of tally we have, we're using $3.6 million, and we've broken it out between those two projects. So,
I got you.
That's where we can split it out. This is just tracking the total kind of total dollars, and we break out the franchise fee. We've got those revenues kind of going to different things.
All right, I'll pass on it.
Okay. Couple other bells and whistles of the model to show you before we show you how we can change things around. Let me go to debt service first. Anything we say is debt service based on these inputs is debt. If it's a GO, if it's a revenue bond, IPRB, based on whatever our terms are. So for instance, let's look at something here, this parking garage. 15 years at 3% for an $8 million borrowing, we can go, and that's automatically going to populate our debt service back here. You'll see right here, we've got a Series 18 parking garage for $8 million coming in. You can see our annual debt service, that's going to be at that 3% rate for 15 years. So to the extent we change that, it's going to automatically change things back here. And then lastly, what we've got, you mentioned not just, you know, hey, can we, do we have the revenues to pay for these, but, you know, tracking certain ratios. So we've got back here, you know, a couple key debt ratios, debt to assessed value, debt per capita, debt service to operating expenditures, fund balance levels. And so, again, depending on our inputs and kind of what assumptions we have on growth, we can track these different debt ratios, financial ratios that you all may have policies for, like fund balance, that credit rating agencies may focus on. And so we've got all this built out here. So as the inputs change, this is automatically going to change as well. Again, the goal of this model is the only thing we change here once we get all our assumptions and agree on the assumptions going forward in terms of growth and everything. The goal is we just change this around and then see how it all flows through. So that's what I want to show you all to see how this this model changes. And I'm going to minimize it a little bit here so we can see how certain things change. So, for instance, road projects, or let me go to another one. Let's go to parking garage, that same one we're on. We've got a plug in here of an $8 million cost for a parking garage. It's going to be funded in 2018 at a hospitality fee revenue bond, out of hospitality fee parking revenues, or hospitality fee revenues dedicated towards parking. We've got it on a level debt service for 15 years at a 3% rate. So let's focus on, keep your eye on this. This is our coverage level at that level. So if we change that $8 million to $6 million, you're gonna see how this
improves.
Actually, this was our parking, sorry. I had your eye on the wrong thing. So this is our
just lost $5 million on the PlayStation, Charles.
This is our column.
Shiny object over here. But yeah. Pay attention to what's happening behind the curtain.
This is our column to focus on right here. So if we go and change that from $8 million to $6 million, you're going to see that our coverage level is going to increase. If we then change that from, that's now a $6 million project, and we change that from 15 years to 10 years, that's then going to shorten it and show you, do you still have an appropriate level of coverage? With that, our interest rate, shorter term, probably going to change as well. We can lower that. I did the wrong one.
You did the wrong one.
We can lower that to 275, and that's going to change your numbers here. So everything we change here is going to automatically flow through to see if you've got the appropriate level of coverage that you want there. And so, go back to our starting point. Same thing on, let's look at franchise. Our franchise revenues there. So what's a project that we've got some roads being funded out of our franchise fee, this line item here. We've got here $6.75 million being funded from roads in 2018. It's going to be funded with a bond issue. 25 years, level debt service, 3.5%. So if we change that road project, instead of 6 million, let's bump it up to 7.5. You can see our coverage went down. We're borrowing more. And since our minimum coverage target we've got here, again, for illustrative purposes now, is 1x, it's going to highlight we're below 1x. Our annual franchise fee revenues are not covering our debt service. And so that function is going to play there. And so that's what we can do, is to dial that back to see that where we can get to, that's being highlighted, because if we went out a couple, it's being rounded up. It's technically 0.998 or something. And so what if we, instead of 25 years, what if we stretch that out to 30 years? You're going to see that our coverage level changed. We're now going out 30 years for that. And so those are all different functions and features within this model that we can change. Now let me show you something on, let me hide this so we can look at fund balance. We've got a couple projects being funded out of fund balance. So let's have our road projects. We've got being $1.8 million being funded in this fiscal year from franchise fees. And so let me hide these two columns here so you can see all this. So you can see our starting point of franchise fees, $1.8 million. Instead of $1.8 million, let's only fund $1 million. And you can see how we just went up $800,000 in our fund balance level. And this, again, is being tracked back to...
In our fund balance or our franchise fee?
Franchise fee fund balance. We've designated each fund to have its own, okay. Right. Its own fund
balance.
It's
in its balance. Own right.
Okay.
Fund.
Okay.
And so...
I just hear fund balance and start right. Getting nervous.
And so we... this is going back to our franchise fee model. You can see how it comes into play. We've got our revenues, our growth rate, our debt service. And so we put in $1 million use of fund balance in fiscal 17 coming out of franchise fee. So you can see how it flows in. We're using $1 million here, our ongoing fund balance. We had a starting point of our beginning fund balance of just over $1 million. So we've added $1.3 million to it, but we've used a few funds. So this is going to be our resulting fund balance. That fund balance is tracking over here. And so those are all different kind of features of the model. And another kind of cool thing that we can play around with, and this is where we can not only, let me unhide these again. Not only can we play around with different projects, break these up, we can turn projects on and off. So again, we start with everything and we want to say, all right, let's take off the parking garage. So again, we've got all these different factors here. Let me go back so I can see this. If I just say, all right, parking garage is off the table, or let's run a scenario where the parking garage is off the table. Let's not fund a parking garage. What does that do to our revenue streams? We can go and simply turn that project off and keep our eye on our hospitality parking over there to the right. You turn that project off, and that's going to totally go away because we haven't used that project. It's going to gray that project out. It automatically strips it out of the plan. We can then turn that project back on. That's going to come right back in. Public safety or surveillance system, $500,000. No, that's fund balance. That's not a good example here. Let's say our road projects down here, $6 million being funded with hospitality fee revenues, the road portion. Let's take that out, and you're going to see that hospitality roads portion, that's going to go away because that's what we had being funded with roads. And so we can turn these projects on, turn them off, split them up. And again, what we're focused on are these outputs here, this impact, these ongoing fund balance levels, our debt service coverage. And again, for illustrative purposes, we've got a millage impact. We dropped in, a portion of the City Hall rehab being funded with a general obligation bond from property tax. If we assume $5.6 million is funded with a GO bond secured by property tax revenues, and that's done in 2018, and we amortize that debt over a 25-year period at 3.25, you can see that in 2019, you're going to need to increase millage by 3 mils to get you there. You can dial that back and say, instead of 5,760, let's go to 3 million. And you can see how that millage impact went down from just under 3 to just under 2. Likewise, you can split that up. Instead of in 2018, let's push that back to 2019. You can see how that that came into play and moved that revenue stream out a year, or sorry, that impact out a year. And so again, you can turn these projects on, you can turn them off, you can change the years, and it's automatically gonna change what these outputs
how
are.
How can we do this? Is Kim gonna have this software, or is program gonna do it? How can we
yep.
and tweak?
And so we can
call you every time.
We can do them a couple different ways. One, you know, if we're sitting in a session like this and saying, hey, let's change this, see what the impact is, we can certainly do it that way. We can have it come back and say, let's have 5 different kind of set scenarios, examples to walk through, and we can pull those up and tweak those. Or again, you know, in a setting like this, we're just changing them on the fly. That's what the model's designed for, is the interactive, take that project out, change that amount, so we get a consensus and say, all right, let's do this priority. So again, it's a live kind of meeting like this where we're going through things. It's a come back with 5 different scenarios as a starting point, and we can work, tweak those. Or it's us sitting through and kind of pulling up the Excel model, and Kim can play around with this Excel model, again, kind of developed in-house. There's a ton of formulas tied to everything, and so
yeah.
It's hard to...
I do spreadsheets. I know what
yeah.
invested time-wise in that.
And so it's hard just to turn it loose, because if one thing gets off, the rest of it...
There's a level of minutia that, quite frankly, I don't think council wants to get involved in.
Right.
I mean, that's why we have a finance director, so... But I'm a little confused. I'm a little confused. Are we going to buy this program and then it belongs to us, or are you a consulting contractor for life?
Hopefully for life. I mean, our goal is act as your financial advisor, advise you through this, and give you advice. And hopefully you all see the value to continue to have us on board and provide
mm-hmm.
you advice like this.
No community that I know of that borrows, which is most communities, do it without a financial advisor. And so it might not always be them, but I think it's relatively foolhardy for us to be thinking
about
borrowing.
Is this a separate section in the budget? Capital, is there a chapter in the budget for capital?
Yes.
To track this?
Yes. And so, I mean, we don't want David down to come to Aiken every 2 seconds to talk to us, but through FaceTime or whatever, we can have sessions where we're sitting in City Hall and he's in his office, and we go through 200 variations of possibilities.
Well, we need to have a session just on that one page for the council, because the last thing in the world we want to do is get to a comfort zone that we think we've identified everything. And then all of a sudden, something else comes up.
Well, yeah, but see,
that's what he's for.
David gives us the options. David doesn't tell us, nor can he tell us what our priorities are and what our projects are. And so we have, in the first instance, reached out to our department head saying, we want to know any potential project for the next 10 years.
Okay.
And so we're getting close.
I guess that's what I was getting.
Yeah, we're getting close to having a laundry list. You know, some of them are... wants. Some of them we're just not going to do. And so, but in the first instance, it is up to our senior managers to be able to identify a laundry list of needs.
Yeah, well, that's where I was headed, because there's a limit of money.
That's right.
Obviously, and we're going to have to delineate, and obviously, politically, you know, that could change through the years.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this whole thing is designed to just keep us from screwing up. So
will it work?
Well, no, we can screw up anything.
What are your
don't
fee
put that
list?
In the paper.
We haven't kind of nailed that down. We've got different ways we do it. It can either be an hourly type fee or a particular engagement. Hey, this is our capital planning phase. Here's what it is. We also, if there's a bond issue that comes out of this, we can get paid out of bond. There's a particular set fee. And so there's a wide variety of ways that we get paid, but that's not a bridge we've crossed yet. Just waiting to see kind of what comes out of this.
I like the idea of doing this, of getting everything as best we can in one document so we know what we're doing, because we have a tendency to bounce from project to project.
Yeah.
I mean,
right. And things are going to change.
This project of the month, and then it changes to something else. So,
right. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure we yet know
everything
that we need to do. I mean, we've got that Whiskey Carter study. I don't know what kind of project that's going to generate.
Right. And that's what this, I mean, ultimately,
hopefully
not
a big one for the county.
Well, it'll be a part of the city, too. Don't forget, we're in there, but.
The goal of this session is to really showcase this, that this is a tool that you all have available to you, that we can look at all these different things, and then hopefully in the ones to come, this inputs tab, these projects, this basically, you know, projects, amounts, timing, that's what we want to really get our arms around and say, all right, let's run through a couple specifics and see, can you do it, and kind of, you know, tweak it if you can.
How would you visualize, John, keeping the public informed of what we're doing?
Well, just like the operating budget, the capital budget, any one of these projects won't happen without significant discussion and debate and approval by the council.
Okay.
And so we've just, I think, significantly increased our capacity to understand, rather than just having a discussion about the merits of one project. Whether you want to support the public safety rehab or building a new building or whatever, blindly looking at one project and not seeing not only the entirety of the list of projects, but looking out 5 or 10 years.
Sure.
And we're hugely increasing our capacity to understand what we're doing. Just from next year, when we enter this conversation, we will have hugely increased our capacity to understand what we're doing.
And I think we need to understand that 2018 CPSC is not a guarantee.
That's true. That is true.
But that's not really even.
That's not.
Well, there's a drop down item there. He's not projecting it.
We haven't done
this. Yeah.
Absent, if you took out the fund balance funded ones, you're still talking about over $40 million worth of projects.
Sure.
That's showing that we can cover with these.
We're going forward with the assumption that we have the revenues that we have. Now, that doesn't mean that we could lose them. We could lose them. We need to figure out what those consequences are. But we're not adding any, in this practice, we're not adding new revenues.
We have a work session on the 14th, which is the audit and capital project sales tax.
Yes.
Is there any chance of getting the handouts for the capital project funding reallocation ahead of time, as opposed to getting it on Monday?
Yes.
Good. Thank you.
And you will get the audit reports in your agenda.
Okay.
So they're supposed to arrive by FedEx.
And we will get you at least a summary of the. We've got a workshop. Is the date on there yet for the? Is it November 21st?
Yes, for the
workshop for what?
Well, no, the 21st that is Tim Copeland's.
That's right. Yeah. And we'll have you'll receive at least an executive summary of the study.
Okay.
Before that.
Okay, before that. And then. The capital projects funding, is that going to be in a packet or separate?
It can be in a packet.
So we'll get that on the packet,
that,
and that's
what you're asking for is an update on the current capital projects.
Yeah.
Yes.
And financial status of all those.
Well, apparently it's going to be a proposal to reallocate some of it.
Yes, as you apparently do from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah, just like time to study it.
Yeah.
So if it comes in a packet before the council meeting, that's fine.
One thing we've got to do, and working with Stuart and Joy on this, we've got to put inflation in both of our firms that we're using. I checked with a couple others. They're using on construction costs, whether it be a building or road, they're using 5% a year. And I guess I'd kind of forgotten, and I'll use Eustis Center. That was March of 14. So now, in a few months, we're 3 years down the road. And it's 5% a year for 3 years. And I think some of the numbers you're going to see would be surprised, because we in the past have not put inflation in some of these numbers, so you're gonna see that when it comes through, and some of the numbers are gonna be eye-popping.
Are there other questions about the model?
I guess one other thing I'd mention, that's where Gary will come into play as well. You know, we've got these different revenue sources. Not every revenue source is available for every single project. There are certain things, either internally you all dedicate certain revenue streams to certain projects, or legally speaking, for instance, hospitality fee revenues, those can't be used for anything. So there's both kind of legally and internally, those available revenue streams go to particular projects.
And is there a way to build that into the model so that you can collaborate with Gary, so that if Dick tries to propose spending $1 million of hospitality for something that's just not legally allowed,
right,
that the model itself?
We can think through that.
That'd be a neat feature to think about.
All I would say is I think David generally has a pretty good handle on this, like whether it smells good or not, if it's close, then he'll probably call me.
Right.
Excuse me, have you worked with other towns where you tried to explain this to their public before?
We do. I mean, this is a relatively new model we've rolled out to some of our clients. Again, it's come from settings like this where you come and sat down and said, here's one scenario, and then we have to keep coming back with different scenarios. So this is a relatively new model that we've been rolling out. It's gotten a good reception. Did a very similar setting like this in North Carolina just last week. Public was invited, not as many there, and I think the feedback was good, but I can't point to direct feedback from public that this is exactly what they're looking for. But I mean, the goal is to educate not just staff, not just elected officials, but the public as well. And so certainly I'll take any feedback you have if it's
hard. Everything I can think of would get them more confused.
Yeah. and that's what we're ultimately trying to get down to, is just not show you every single formula that's built into the back here. Try to simplify it to one page. What are the outputs we're focused on? What are the inputs we're focused on, and what are the outputs we're focused on? And that's where we get to this main page here to try to simplify it and say, is this a yes or a no?
Can you put a project by summary or summary by project?
Yeah. And so we've got, down here we're tallying whatever we say up here, we're tallying, is it being, funded by property tax, hospitality, franchise fee? What are the total projects funded? What types? And so we are keeping a running tally of the type, the revenue source,
This is just an observation, but the most important process that y'all can do when you go through this, from my observation, is the prioritization of the projects. And from there, developing budgets and moving down, but knowing what are the critical path projects, what are the things that you're going to absolutely have to do as a city moving forward, then that will sharpen the discussion on the rest of it.
And that's where those scenarios can come into play for the next iteration of this. One scenario is our absolute needs only. This is what we need. Scenario two is needs plus something else, and kind of keep building from that. So you can go from both ends of the spectrum, needs, absolute needs only, dire needs, everything, and then kind of different scenarios in between.
Yeah, this condenses a whole heck of a lot of work. Putting that spreadsheet together is a lot of work, but it also condenses. If we were sitting doing a spitballing of scenarios, we could spend hundreds of hours of thinking and running calculators, and this thing kind of condenses all of it. And you not only see the impact of any one project, but you see them all together in one place, how they interplay. So it's a lot. There's a lot of data that's happening there.
So I think over the next 5 or 6 months, we will be doing much more analysis on the capital side than we have maybe ever, but at least in the recent past. Michelle's staff is preparing a presentation for December on the issue of infrastructure, pipes in the ground. Tim's got a presentation in a couple of weeks dealing with trash, dealing with the equipment that we're buying, and also the possibility of a transfer station if we can save money. So we're going to start introducing workshops and projects, and we'll always have this as part of the presentation now.
Okay.
The overall model. If you have additional questions, David's available after this meeting tonight, and he's always available to answer any questions that you have. But I guess without saying it, we have just initiated next year's fiscal budget process.
Never too early.
Well, I've got a spreadsheet in me.
Philip wants that for Christmas.
Yeah, I love this.
I move we adjourn.
Thank you.
A motion. A second.
Thanks, sir.
Okay. I want to thank everyone for coming out and staff for putting this together. David, thank you for being here.
Absolutely.
Very appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Our work session is adjourned.
Yes, sir.
If I borrow $13 million from January 1st, commit more.
Yes.
Okay.
For other projects.
First of all, 16 and